1911. I'm 74 years old, and tonight I'm interviewing Mr. Belontalki, who is a lifelong resident of Fort Kent. Belon, tell us some of your experiences.
Well, my name is Belontalki, and I've been born in Fort Kent and always stayed in Fort Kent. And I commenced awful young. I never had the chance to go to school. We were a poor family, and I commenced to earn my own living when I was 11 years old. And I've made the old man Thomas, the two Thomas men, that was more in my father because I was richer and they took care of me. And I commenced to cook in Montauk when I was 12 years old. We used to leave here in the fall about the 15th of August. And then we used to dig a channel from the Mara Valley there to Long Lake. There wasn't no dam. They used to call the foot of the lake the Harder Pond. And when I was 14 years old, I was cooking in the boat. An old man called us coming to spoil it and go to Georgia Arsene. And Paul says, Charlotte was going up cooking, and he says, I'm sick and I'm going to turn back. So we were going on the Canyon Brook, and we had the camp 4 miles in the, up the brook, but we had to make a shed at the mouth of the river. And there was an old, Thomas told me to stay there, and we forgot, I'll tell you the whole thing, we forgot dough from the cook. There was dough from the target. You had to cook with sourdough. And we forgot to take some dough out of the boat to start sourdough in for the camp. So old Emil's was there, and we went and peeled some soft maple bark. And we boiled that and strained it, and we started dough with that. That was kind of sour. We didn't have no vinegar then, and no, if we had the, after a while, we had some apples, and the apples was all in a string. You know, there wasn't fat, there was some, all in the
I say, were dried apples, dried they called apples, them, didn't they? They put them on the string.
An apple and two, you know, must have passed needle with a piece of string, you know. And then, but we didn't have that. So we started that with sourdough. And then we had an old stove and it used to smoke. So I told Mr. Connell, I said that, if I stay here, I said, and it's quite a thing, I said, for me to go and cook for 50 men when I always used to cook for 5-6 in the boat. Oh, he said, you'll be all right. So I said, all right. So I said, you'll have to send me a new stove. So he did. And it was a nice new ironclad, and it was all boxed in good shape. And then we didn't have no stove lift, so we used to take a fire for a stove lift, you know. And we used to have a lot of horseshoes to put under a pot. The pot wasn't like there now, you know, so the big iron pots and there was a machine there in the bottom of that used to, everything used to stick to that. You had to put a plate, you know, so it would just about take a plate, and then you put that on a horseshoe and it would do it pretty good. Yeah, when he came about November before Christmas, and he looked at the stove, he said, how'd you break the part of your stove? I said, it was broke when it got you. He looked at me, and I can remember that just as well as it's better than it was yesterday. He looked at me right in the eyes, and he said, I didn't think you could last. But he said, you're awful good. And he said, I'm going to tell you one thing. He said, the teeth was nothing at all. He said, you can laugh from the teeth. But he says, a darn liar, he says, there's nothing in the world that you can do with that.
Belon, you always, did you always, from the time that you were a young man, you say 11 years old, you worked in the woods?
Every winter.
Every winter.
Yeah. I cooked in the woods till I was in 18. In 18, that was the year of the flu, and everybody was dying.
Yeah.
So I didn't have no place to go and cook. And David Charlotte was jobbing at the Big Brook Depot, and he died. So Thomas said, here, he says, it's a chance for you to go to work. So I went there and I was jobbing at Big Brook Depot.
Then you were cutting lumber then?
Yeah. And that's the year that we had the big steam log hauler there. We used to haul with a gumbo. And then that big steam log hauler, the hauler come and they hauled it on the roof of that.
Where did they haul the lumber with the steam log hauler?
They hauled it on the roof. They put it first there, they hooked it there, at the foot of the lake. There's a lake on the roof.
Yeah.
And they built a dam.
Mm-hmm. They built the dam to form the lake, didn't they, Willard?
There was a kind of a little.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they built the dam.
And they were hauling the lumber into the lake?
Yeah, below the lake.
Below the lake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that wonder, a funny thing, you know, there wasn't too many fellows educated, you know. And there was Marcel Reno. You must have heard about it. He was an awful man, an able man, but he got long arms and he never looked very good, you know. So I had a little town with that lady, I had a barrel of flour sitting there, and there was an old folks from Bangor, they were all big men. It was probably 6 of them. It was Harry Hasty, and was the head man of the stable, you know, and he used to get them stables from Bangor. Around here, there wasn't too many people educated, you know, that could stay. So they said, we heard somebody that couldn't put a barrel of flour like that on his back. I said, here, that's nothing at all. I said, half of the crew can do that. They didn't call me a liar, but it's almost. So most of them always was eating at the table, way in the corner, so I went for people. I said, Marcel, I said, when you leave the table there, I said, put that barrel of flour on the shoulder. So Marcel just took that barrel of flour and that way and put it on the shoulder and put it back down again. I said, do you want to see any more putting barrel of flour? No, they said, we've seen enough. But he was about the only man that could do that.
How long were you up Big Brook lumbering?
Oh, not too long.
Not too long, huh? How many winters about?
Oh, 5 or 6 winters.
5 or 6 winters.
Yeah.
And then you say you went up in the woods about the 15th of August. You'd come down the last of March, middle of March?
I never come down that time.
You never come down?
No. I used to stay there and you'd cook for when they used to make booms. For the fellow that stayed for the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the old Bruno Pardy, he was an older cook to me, he could handle better food, you know. Then it was baker. We had to cook with a baker and outdoors, you know, a lot. And I used to come down, the commissary always took care of me. He said, I never drank no rum. I never took a drink till I was 48 years old. Now I take one drink, but that's all. I never take more than one drink, and I don't like it anyway. So I used to come down and cook where Chase's house is now. You remember that old house over there? We used to call that the Gordon Farm house.
Yeah, the Gordon Farm, yeah.
Yeah.
The barn was on the other side of the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at the foot of the hill near the river there, they had a place there in old times where they used to make coal that they used to blacksmith with augers.
Mm-hmm.
They used to cut a pile of augers and bury it in the ground. Set at the fire, you know, in good shape, and then there, and that used to make coal that they could shoe and do anything with the iron.
Yeah.
It was just like the coal that comes from outside, but there was no outside. Then they had to make their own for it, their own.
That's how they made coal, huh? That's how they made coal to eat the iron, to make a horseshoe or fit a horseshoe, anything like make picks for pig poles.
Yeah, that's the way they used it.
That's
why they got the coal.
Yeah. So something like charcoal now.
Yeah, something like charcoal.
Yeah.
And the augers, of course you can't start a fire with augers. But after a fire is started, it's the best wood there is to burn, green, in a boat, if you're cooking a boat. You can't get no wood hardly, you know, near the river hardly. But with augers, it makes a hot fire in the glasses, make a lot of coal in the stove.
Bellon, you said something a while ago, you used to bake in ovens. Describe these ovens, how they used to be made, and how you put the bread in there or biscuits in there to cook them, and how they cook.
That's a baker with an open fire.
Open fire, huh?
No. That was made out of tin. and the back of it was low. That you just grow be about 4 inches, I suppose, flat between the baker sheet there and the outside. Oh, it must have been 4 or 5 feet.
Yeah.
So about 4 feet long and about 2-3 feet high. And we used to put that on rock, and we used to put that near the fire, and that would cook awful good bread.
The reflection
of the fire would cook bread, but it wouldn't take too long. And it was awful good bread, that sourdough bread, you know, it used to be, and you could make cookies, you could do anything like that.
Villain, describe how you made sourdough bread. How did you mix it?
Well, we used to mix it that night for in the morning. We used to have a tub, you know, and for 50 men, we used to put a barrel of flour in two, and then we used to leave some dough in the tub, and you could stir your dough there that night. And in the morning it was raised up, and you used to put that on the breadboard, and then take soda that way and put it all over your bread, and knead it.
Baking soda?
Yeah, baking soda. Didn't have no terms on it. It was all sour bread. And along the river, when we used to start with a drive there, there was always three men on each side with poles. They used to call them sappers. And then men like the Jerry and Marcel Blay and a lot of them, all we had hundreds of them, that never got in a battle when they left Long Lake or Manassas Lake or later. Then we used to have to drive to Van Buren. At first, there was no cooperation. No, it was every man that like McAllister and the McIntosh and Commerce and all them fellows who used to drive it way down to St. John the Brentwood. And old Ned Pond, him, there was a little boy driving sticks in the brook. And he had a boom. And he had wings on it. And he could cross the little brook, you know, with his little stick. So old Pond brought back to him. Ned Pond stopped. And then they commenced, the drives wouldn't go no further than the Mata Valley then, because old Pond used to job that drive and take it down to St. John the Brenda. With that boom, there was no log that could go on flat and get stuck on rocks too much, because they could give it that jam a log wherever they wanted to with that boom. They had brakes, you know, and they wanted to cross the river, they shoved the reins more in the brakes. So it would, it could cross the river right through you.
The brace would roll the logs out of the river wherever.
There was a wing.
It would
say like a plank, you know,
big
plank.
They call them wing booms, did they?
Wing booms, yeah.
They saved a lot of work.
Oh, that then. It was an awful thing when everybody had to drive his drive to St. John.
Yeah.
And then about, I don't know just what year, it must have been, 1910, I suppose, when Brown got up here. And then Brown used to cut 1 million a day on an average when they used to cut in the fall. He used to cut about 100 million. And Conliff used to cut it, not Conliff itself, but the outfit came down, they used to cut about 100 million. So there was about 200 million that used to go down the river. And all the peddlers that used to peddle on their backs or the horses, that was, they say, that was the best road to get money that there was in the state of Maine. More money handled, you know. On account, there was 6 mills from your St. Vincent. And then there was, four or five big stopping places. And that stuff was all coated with horses. You take the time with people. And there was a long while there, there was single horses, and there was a lot of them, all single sleds. We used to put 1,000 pounds to a sled, to a horse, and the man used to take care of 3 horses. And they St. John's Plantation in Fort Kent and whatever there, they used to have a meeting just like they have now every spring. And they wanted to go to double road. But nobody, there was more men with one horse than 2 horses. So old Vital Bozier, he was a blacksmith in Kansas, So you made a set, sled with a set over. So the horse used to work to walk in one direction, and the sled used to go in the other one. Oh my God, they got the double road right off, and then they plowed it, and then we had a good road. Before that, we just had the single road. And you take like Robin, he was driving stage. And he said, no wonder they used to have one horse ahead of the other. They used to have a pair of horses that would go to Neil McLean and then St. Francis, and they used to shift horses and go to Gardner's for them. And they always had passengers. And Robert Barron was driving the stage for years and years. And I think the old son of a gun is living yet. He was living last night.
No, he's dead. I found out Easter Sunday, just this last Easter Sunday, I met a fellow that married a niece of his, and I was asking him about Leverett, you know, because I knew Leverett well when he came here. He used to live at our house, and he told me he'd died.
He must have died near 100 years old.
Yeah.
Because I was just a small kid, and Leverett Barron, and all the money that he used to earn him, he used to buy candy, chocolate for the girls.
For the girls.
It's true. Whatever was a girl.
Candy and ice cream.
Yeah.
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 He was a great guy for ice cream.
Yeah.
He used to come in the drugstore here and sit here and buy every girl come in, he'd buy her a cone of ice cream or a dish of ice cream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they used to, so Fawn used to drive them dry, and then at Van Buren they had to start all them logs. Because we had to all mark them at the end with land black. But the Van Buren log was a diamond. And the other, the other one was a kind of a cross, I don't know, they called that in a tuella,
Star.
Star.
Yes.
Them logs used to go down to Van Buren to St. John.
They had a sorting gap at right above Keegan where they used to sort them. They held them all there and then sorted them.
Yes, about 100 million used to go down to St. John, about 100 million used to stay in Keegan.
Bellon, do you remember or do you know what is the biggest drive ever went by Fort Kent? How many feet of lumber?
Oh, maybe 200 million, 250 million, I suppose.
That would be the biggest drive.
I think so, because Thomas used to cut 100 million,
mm-hmm.
you know, every year. Sometimes a little more, maybe a little less.
Yeah. But you could figure on 100 million in his operation.
Yeah.
How many camps did he have? Do you remember that?
Yes. We used to, there was only one window. The camps they used to cut from 1.5 million to 2 million.
Yeah.
And then it would take us, you know, then it was all axes. So we had a long while that we didn't have no saws, you know.
Yeah.
Everything was done with axes.
You didn't even have a cross-cut saw, huh?
Well, we had a kind of a cross-cut saw, but there was no record to it. It was just like a hand saw, and it couldn't saw too good. And then we used to go and camp in the woods there. We never had no tar paper. Not a spike, not a nail, nothing like that. Just an axe and an auger.
How would you hold it together, Bellon?
Notch it.
Notch it?
Yeah, in the corner.
Yeah.
Then we didn't take too long to build a camp. And there was only a window in the peak of the camp. And then the bed, the bed was 4 feet from the ground, and the other one was on the ground. You could bow and the roof, well, they used to have to split them shingles. They used to have a throw, that they call it.
Throw, yes.
And the floor were round.
Mm-hmm.
They used to have the chig, that they call it. It was made like a hole.
Yes.
And they used to hold that. And the tables, well, sometimes they used to use logs to make a table, and other times we used to take barrels of cave, you know.
Yes.
Take an old barrel and make a table of that. There was no tablecloth, nothing like that.
You lumbered before they had saws, eh, Bellon?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
You take the year that I came to McClellan, the year of Birdsall, that they cut pine cuts there, 4 feet long. You can go and get some uncut shit that wasn't there at some. And I had to knock them big enough that there was square that rode in.
Uh-huh.
Nor was I.
These crows that you were talking about that you made shingles with, you made them out of cedar.
But the crow was a piece of ivy, like an ivy.
Yeah, that was
a
knife.
There was a handle to it.
Yeah.
And then they had a moss, made a wooden moss, and they used to saw that about three feet long, I suppose, that cedar, nice bucket cedar. Mm-hmm. And then we used to cock them camp with moss.
Yes.
Then there was a lot of moss. If you take the ash, big ash, the ash, you know, with the kind of wood and the cedar, you might find, you know, my daughter, bag post on a tree like that, moss. And that moss was kind of long. You could cock a camp for that. And
without, well, and let me interrupt here just a minute. You say cork a camp. What do you mean? You take the moss and cork a camp. Where did you cork it?
Well, then that was round logs.
Yes.
And it used to make cracks between the round logs.
Uh-huh. They didn't fit close together.
Yeah. It was pretty close together.
Yeah.
But you had to have some kind of stuff to cork that up.
You know? So you'd cork those cracks up, the length of the camp, or the length of the log.
With the log.
Yeah.
And you take, now we say we've got no deer. You take the deer, that's what's good to be eaten for the deer. The deer and the caribou and the moose, that's where they got their living out of that moss.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, well, there might have been, oh, I don't know how many horses. And when you got done in the road, we used to hog the branch, you know, and when you got done in that road, the deer, so that would give the deer an awful chance there. There was oats there, and there was hay that the horses left, and that was packed with deer. And we never had anything in them but deer. Those law, those game warden, but when the game warden was left Fort Century, you knew it some way. There was no telephone, they sent a man to hire before there was telephone. And the telephone, that was me, and Adolph Shear, and Polly Davis, that took that telephone from Gardner and took it up to the farm in Connell's Depot.
You run the line through the woods, eh?
Through the woods.
Yeah.
We had them kind of a bottle, you know, that we used. We cut a towpath along the river there.
Yeah.
And we used to have them, I think there were them, I don't remember, but there must have been a couple of hundred feet of wire. And we used to put that on the towpath there.
Yeah.
And then we used to take a stick of wood, and two of us used to haul that. Well, the other fellow used to watch the.
Then you had insulators, didn't you? You passed the wire through
the
and
wire,
tied it on
and
the tree.
We used to tie it with a piece of wire. It was a kind of a round thing. It was made in two pieces.
Yeah. Insulators, they called them. You run the telephone line through that, and then you tied that to a tree so it would stay up. Nobody'd hit it and tear it down.
Yeah.
The telephone worked pretty good then.
Oh, yeah.
Then you knew when the game wardens were coming.
But before that, they used to send a man ahead of the game wardens. And there was when they used to cross the road, you know, from one branch there, and there was some horse given there, and they used to say, "You're too thin, I'm going to let you go. You're all right, I'm going to shoot you."
you remember when Frank Austin went on the game warden, went on as a game warden. They used to call him a moose warden then, didn't they?
That was old Frank.
Old Frank?
Yeah.
Frank Austin, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he was an awful rough game warden.
He was, huh?
Yeah, on the lake down here.
Down to Cross Lake?
No, the other one.
Where was that? Eagle?
No. Not Baker. Saint-Agat.
Oh, Long Lake.
Yeah. Down. There was a fella there. He was caught. He was catching a fella. And after the fella got out of jail, he shot him, and he shot him in his hand. He got two fingers. After fella, old Frank Austin.
Yeah.
And old Cash, you know, wasn't too soft either when he was a game warden. And it's queer, when he took charge in the woods, old Cash took charge in the woods, he wasn't no more than 20, 18, 19 years old, often young, for the Stockholm company.
Yeah.
he hauled logs down where I was hauling out from Jarrett and all them places.
Cash was Frank's son.
Frank's son.
And he learned to be a game warden from his father, probably.
Yeah, and he was a bad one.
He was a bad one, huh?
And it's queer. He was an awful good woods boss. And then when I used to cut wood down the Jarrett there and Golf Lake and all that, was him was the father, the head man there.
He
took old Grant's place.
Yeah.
And he was about the nicest man that you ever seen.
Good man to work for, Bella?
Good man to work for him. And he was, if he had anything for you to say, to you, he'd always say it in good faith and not make you mad or make you feel bad. He had a good way. And he took charge. Then he took the mountain and he didn't like it.
Yes.
And he had a lot of wood there. And everybody liked him. He made money too.
Bellon, when you started about 11 years old, what were the wages then?
The wages then was $30 a month.
$30 a month?
Yeah, for a good man.
Yeah.
And then for 20, from 20 to 15, and then you got what you earn. And I'm telling you, you see, today we're talking about how grub is high. It is high. But it ain't, the farmers got no chance the way they had then. Because then, you never got a pound of steak cheaper than 25 cents. And other meats there, they used to, some peddlers that used to peddle the beef, you know.
Yeah.
And you never seen any meat less than 10 cents a pound. And you was only getting 10 pounds of meat for your day's work. And only 4 pounds of steak. And a barrel of flour never was under $4. That was 200 pounds of flour. And beans never less than $3 a 100 pounds. And sugar never less than $4 a 100 pounds. But then people did that. Joe Mack in Thomas Store right there used to sell more stuff in a day, I'm sure, than either store to a sushi store or parody store sells today. More head to ground. You see, then nobody would buy anything in a bag. If he went to the barrel of flour and a bag of beans and 100 pounds of sugar.
You didn't buy it by the 10 and 5 pounds like we do today.
No, a barrel of four. But then they used to have a mess for it. And then they used to have them little barrel of corned beef, half a barrel. Man would buy one of them. So when you left in the fall to go to the woods for Congress there, you had all your grub, your family had their grub for a little barrel of molasses, 5 gallons of molasses.
Now, Bellon, when you bought in the Cunliffe store here, when you bought your supplies to go in the woods, did Cunliffe used to tote that up?
Oh, yeah. When we were jobbing, you get everything at the depot.
You got it at the depot?
Yes, or your camp.
Yeah.
What was the depot?
That was the depot, that was the main place that everything used to go there, just like an office, you know. And they used to tote all the stuff there, and then you used to tote that stuff from the depot to the camp. Because a fellow by the name of Lee Mills that was clerk there and walking boss, and that used to deliver the stuff.
They'd leave here with all the supplies, and they'd take them up to the depot and unload them and store them there, and then you come from the camps and got it and took it to your camp.
Yeah, they used to tote that in the winter.
Yeah, stored it in the winter.
But in the spring and the fall, they used to tote it to back shores, and as I told you.
Yes.
And then we used to put that in the boat from 8 to 10 tons, the way the water was.
Yeah.
And there was a pair of horses taken on the back with a rope about 200 feet, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And when you used to leave the back shore, then the horses used to go afloat, trying to get there and take the cut. And we all enjoyed the ride. And then we used to go to the falls, and we had to unload all that stuff again and haul that in a jumper, the wooden bread, used to call that jumper, over the falls. And the falls is about a quarter of a mile, I suppose. There's two places that you can stop at the hauler, but the upper places was always the way with a boat. So it was about a quarter of a mile that you had to haul all that stuff. And then you used to put that there and get to Connors Depot there and unload that. not all. We used to go to the mother of the square cook there, Ron Pond, all them.
Up to Long Lake.
Up to Long Lake.
Now you mentioned the Cunliffe Lake, Bellon. Was that where, was Cunliffe the first one that lumbered up there, and that's why it was named Cunliffe Lake, was
that
it?
That was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all it was Cunliffe that opened, and then Miss Craycook, that was Saibiki, Sevensico, the one on the main river.
Yeah.
That was Saibiki, Ross Lake, there and all them places. That was Ross Lake and Clayton Lake. That was old Saibiki that owned.
The Dickey operation wasn't quite as big as the Cunliffe operation,
no,
was
never
it?
Well, was
it never were as big.
And then you go up to Ross Lake, and from Ross Lake, the little Allegash is 3 miles. And the Kerry used to, for a company by the name of Kerry. I was there with Daddy Gallagher hunting, and it was by the name of Kerry. And they were making good business there. And they got hauling, they used to haul those horses. And then it got further, made the tramway there, and I don't know, they got mixed up with a steam log house. Two or three of them.
Yeah.
Big operation. And when I went there that spring, oh, there must have been a half a mile. The sled, tires, and the big pine under the runners, and they were all standing up, that way. And there must have been